All right, let's get into some African analysis this morning, because just every 2 weeks or so, we get to talk to JJ Cornish, and we get to talk about things that are happening on our continent, which somehow just don't get the amount of news interest and attention
that they should.
That conflicts much, much further away that probably have a lot less to do with our day-to-day lives get. And we'll talk to him. It is, of course, brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, which is what you need to check out if you want to find yourself useful and relevant on the continent. They've got some amazing, amazing courses, amazing lectures. I would suggest you follow the links on our website and you will go through to where they are. Find out all about the Johannesburg Business School. If you haven't thought of, maybe that's the way that you can find yourself a very cool little corner of the economy to exploit and to make use of your knowledge and help other people along as well. Johannesburg Business School, go and check them out. JJ Cornish, how are you, sir?
Bonjour, I'm immensely well, thank you.
I'm very happy. It's a happy Tuesday morning to you.
Thank you. Thank you ever so much. Very kind of you to be so kind to me on a Tuesday morning.
So, JJ, I wish that we lived on a kinder planet, and I wish that, you know, everybody understood suffering in equal ways, but it doesn't seem that that's the case. It's an anniversary which nobody really is paying any attention to. You, however, are here to remind us. The anniversary of the civil war in Sudan. And the fact that
it was yesterday, yes.
Yeah, this is more costly in human suffering than either Gaza or the Ukraine. France is hosting a summit to move this up the misery agenda. But does anyone care, JJ?
Well, you know, the UN called for $3 billion and 6% of that came in. There is donor fatigue at the United Nations, and a lot of countries say, yeah, the United Nations calling for money. Mm-hmm. Well, Emmanuel Macron, the French president, took the initiative and he hosted the summit, and it was Western powers, neighbors, people like that. And he says they have come up with $2.1 billion. That's fantastic. That will go to food, water, medicine, and urgent needs for the 51 million Sudanese. They have 10 million Sudanese who have been displaced. There are 25 million who have been affected by the civil war between the army and the rapid support forces, which will go on because both sides, and I've said this before, think they can win. And while military forces think they can win, they're not interested in talking peace.
Yeah.
730,000 children near death from hunger, right on the brink of famine. So this is, you know, it's the largest displacement crisis in the world. And the services are not getting through. Now, there's no timeline to the promises made at the summit in Paris yesterday. We don't know when that money will come in because people have pledged it, and they probably don't have it in budgets ready to go straight away. Mm. But we hope it comes through very quickly. Sudan can't produce food. Its state services are broken down. The economy's in absolute has gone belly up, and it really is the saddest humanitarian disaster on the planet. And remember that Darfur was just a couple of 20 years ago. Darfur is being hit worse than the other regions of Sudan by this. You know, one part of the one side of the war is fighting the RSF in Darfur, and then they're taking on people who have remained neutral. Those who have supported the RSF within Darfur are being attacked by the army. So, you know, it's just a mishmash and an awful story. But what
happened?
Millions on the brink of famine.
You know, JJ, didn't we have Angelina Jolie and George Clooney and all of those people going to Darfur and putting on scarves to protect themselves from the sun and the wind and sitting on their haunches next to starving people? And holding their hands and pretending they were Jesus Christ or Mother Teresa or Princess Diana or some combination of the three. Why have they all lost interest? Is it no longer a sexy cause? Because I see they're all going they're going to the Ukraine to shake hands with Vladimir Zelensky.
Yes, that seems to be the guy. You know, I have a pair of Timberland boots, very beautifully made Timberland boots, with a map of Darfur on, saying hands off Darfur. You know, Timberland got involved. Right. I haven't seen the same for Sudan. I haven't seen the same for Ukraine. I haven't seen the same for Gaza either. You know, this is the donor fatigue I'm talking about. And people are saying we can give to good causes, but really the best cause is our own people, and our own people are suffering.
All right. Well, I don't think we're going to get anywhere by asking people to be equal about their care for various places. So let's move on. Sad as that story is, human rights groups, I have a feeling this might be sad as well, led by Amnesty International, want to block the sale of Shell's assets in Nigeria until there are guarantees that people living there will be protected. So obviously we know that Nigeria is a very oil-rich country, and the oil ordinarily should help the people of that country to live better lives. You would think there would be beneficiation, which is the big word that they use when it comes to natural resources. We use it in this country too. Whether or not it happens is a whole different story. But how does it help to go after the companies? Is that just because the companies actually can be held to account because the governments can't? It's the standard idea of, like, if we can't get the real the party that is to blame, if we can't get them to do the right thing, we'll just go for the next best thing and the party that's actually competent or is trying to do a job because there are commercial incentives, we'll go after them instead.
Well, God bless Shell, but they are very, very liable for what has been happening there. And what they are selling, though, is the onshore interests there. The land dealer. Now, and Nigeria is the largest producer of oil in Africa. In 2008, there was this massive oil spill into the Ogoni region. And of course, the beneficiation, you say, and the benefits of the oil are not spreading. So they are liable for they paid in 2015, they paid $18 million in compensation. In 2021, they paid $100 million. But they're suffering. Nigerians, of course, are Nigerians. They come up to the oil pipelines, cut into them, and steal the oil. There have been massive fires caused by this. They sabotage the oil pipelines because they believe that they're not getting their share of the wealth of this natural resource. Hmm. Well, what the human rights groups are saying is that we need to know that the what is left is fully protected, and that for the people still living there. Do you remember the story of Ken Sarawiwa in 1995, an environmental activist in the Ogoni region, and he was charged with killing some tribal members who opposed him, and was actually executed by the military dictatorship of Sani Abacha.
Right.
In fact, Nelson Mandela got very involved in that case, and he's seen as a martyr in this cause. Now, Shell is not getting out of Nigeria. They're not that stupid. It's a massive oil money market for them.
Mm-hmm.
They will do offshore drilling in the oil in the Gulf of Guinea, and they'll keep up their gas production. I'm a great proponent of gas because having been to that summit of the gas producers and gas exporters,
sure.
Nigeria, a particularly big one of those, and that seems to go unnoticed in parts of the world, but not unnoticed by the multinationals who are making billions from it.
All right, so I mean, it's a way to hopefully bring some pressure to bear on the Nigerian government, but let's agree that as exploitative as Shell may be, they're doing what they say they will, whereas the government is not doing what it says it will, and the government are the ones who are responsible for the people, not Shell. It isn't a country owned by Shell.
Well, they have to okay the deal that Shell has made with a consortium of five countries, some of them Nigerian, most of them Nigerian, consortium called Renaissance. And it is to the government that the human rights groups have gone and said, don't okay this deal until we have absolute guarantees that they're going to clean up the mess that they still have left behind, and that there are guarantees that the people living there, particularly the Ogoni, are not going to suffer for generations to come because of what Shell has done.
Yeah, I'm who's making the money out of this besides Shell?
Well, the consortia will hope to make money. I don't think they've gone in for charitable reasons.
No, not for altruistic.
You know, being the largest producer, whenever something goes wrong, Angola steps up and becomes the largest producer. And Angola has problems of its own. But, the production out of Nigeria, the largest in Africa, very, very important.
All right, JJ, then finally, athletics authorities, it's not often that we get to talk about sport, but are probing allegations that three African athletics stars let a Chinese runner win Sunday's Beijing half marathon. In other words, that the Chinese said, we'll pay you to get out of the way.
Well, they ran the race together. I used to run marathons and half marathons and ran a lot with a lot of other people. Mm-hmm. Bruce Fordyce was never among them. You know, I don't know what he has against me. He always used to shoot into the lead and leave me and many others behind. But here we have the three, Rob Ketter and Willie Nangat of Kenya and Dejan Haile of Ethiopia, running with He Jin, who won the Asian Games gold medal in the marathon. Now, they got there, and they were seen to be pointing to the finish line and waving He Jin through. And afterwards, when questioned about this, William Angat said, yes, I let him win because he's my friend. Run before, and I let him win. He's my friend. Then later, changed his story to say that he was a pacemaker. But if you are a pacemaker, your number indicates, you know, has the words pacemaker on it, meaning that you have certain rules that you're allowed to step aside or something like that. But the Chinese media is saying that sportsmanship has been shamed. There has been much cheating in marathons in China in 2018, the half marathon in Shenzhen. 258 runners cheated. They went and hid in the bushes and came running out when the runners came round for the second lap. And in 2019, in Shenzhen, a woman marathoner was seen riding a bike. The officials stopped her and said, get off that bike. But as soon as the officials went away, she got back on the bike and ran on. So there's a rather a checkered career, or rather checkered reputation that long-distance running has in China, I'm afraid to say.
All right. Well, at least we've got something to laugh about this morning, too. Yeah. And it's not all bad news. And obviously, I deign to say happy anniversary, but, I'd like to say a whole lot of more encouraging things to South Sudan and to Sudan. All right, JJ, thank you so much. We'll chat to you in 2 weeks' time. I think he's frozen.
He's frozen, yeah. Hmm. He looks a little frozen.
Well, unless he was, he froze out of just like sheer desperation having to talk to us. That's all. That is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, and you can find out more about them by going along to them on the social media, on their own website. You can find out all about their courses and a whole lot more. That's the Johannesburg Business School. And thank you, JJ Cornish, with Africanalysis for this morning.